In 2005, a neuroscientist named Sam Harris published a best-selling book called The End of Faith. And in that book, he very stridently denounced organized religion as being both dangerous and absurd. In particular, he blasted traditional, dogmatic, and literalistic religion. And so this book of his tended to really stoke the whole debate about science and religion. And it also helped kick off a movement in the very early part of the 2000s called the New Atheism. Some of you may have heard of that. Well, fast forward to almost 10 years, 2014, Sam Harris writes another book. And this book is called Waking Up, A Guide to Spirituality Without Religion. So in this book, he lauds the value of the spiritual, the mystical, the contemplative, the transcendent. And he says that you can only go so far in trying to explain reality through science and secular culture. And he even says there are important truths to be gained from the experiences of Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, Rumi, and other spiritual sages. Well, this is quite a progression, isn't it? From fiery critic to spiritual seeker. But this story of how Sam Harris evolved is not uncommon. And in fact, he's really the classic example of those who say they are spiritual but not religious. Now, when you first hear that phrase, you may think, well, that's an oxymoron. Spiritual but not religious, aren't they essentially the same thing? And for a long time, they really were considered to be the same thing. Those words were used interchangeably because both spirituality and religion connoted a belief in a higher power or a higher presence, and both implied the desire to have a deeper understanding and a deeper relationship with that higher power and that higher presence. And so there was really kind of all mixed in there together until about the 1970s. In the 1970s, the distinction began to be drawn between what was spiritual and what was religious. And so the word spiritual began to be used for the more private thought and experience, the more private practices of being in touch with the divine. And the word religion was used to mean public membership in a religious institution, then including buying into some very defined denomination or doctrine. And so there was this distinction, and it was there because of what was happening at the times. And the rift between those two definitions continued to widen. It widened for a variety of reasons. One of them was the advancements in science and certainly biblical scholarship and more understanding of when the Bible was written, who wrote it, why they wrote it, more understanding of the times in which Jesus lived, and also the rise of what we call cultural relativism, where people have a growing sense of other points of view. And so it's much more difficult for them to offer an unqualified loyalty to one specific denomination or path, kind of a more kind of open-mindedness resulting. And so this rift continued to happen, and it got infused with a certain amount of anger and angst and frustration. So some of the words that have been used by the spiritual but not religious to describe organized religion include judgmental, negative, dogmatic, homophobic, hypocritical, political, guilt-inducing, exclusive, only one right religion, and more focused on preserving the institution than helping people grow spiritually. Now, I want to say that there are many very positive characteristics and qualities associated with being part of an organized religion, that generally the research shows people who are happier, that they're more engaged in the community, they vote more frequently, they're civically minded, And they tend to have strong friendships and networks that are very meaningful for their lives. But we're not really talking about all of that as much as trying to get inside the heads of the spiritual but not religious and how they have seen things. And I realize as I say this that there are probably more than a few of you who might have called yourself this in the past or may even today consider to call yourself that. But the significant thing is this. The number, the percentage of Americans who call themselves spiritual but not religious continued to grow from the 1970s to the 1990s into the 21st century and has continued to grow continually in this beginning of the 21st century. Not only is it growing, but it's growing faster. And so now, research is showing, and I draw from the Pew Forum's most recent research, they interviewed 35,000 people across the country, all 50 states and the District of Columbia, to find out what are their religious affiliations, their spiritual beliefs, etc. And their top finding was that this category of the unaffiliated is the fastest growing segment in the religious landscape in the United States. Don't get too lost in the numbers there. I'm going to explain them in just a moment. But here's the thing. That it grew by almost 7% between 2007 and 2014, and is now at about 23% of the population. That's almost one in four people in the U.S. who say they are either atheist, agnostic, and the lion's share of them say they're nothing in particular. And in fact, they're called the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, because when they fill out a form and they ask what is their religious affiliation, they say none. So that group has grown significantly. Well, at the same time, as you can see in the chart up there, the percentage who affiliate and define themselves, or not define themselves, but affiliate with Christianity has been declining. Declined almost 8 percentage points between 2007 and 2014. And that is reflected or largely caused by a decline in those who associate with Catholicism, with mainline Protestantism, and even the evangelical denominations are seeing a decline there. Now, I just want to point out one small fact here. So you see where it says other Christian? That's us. And an other Christian, I mean, you got to start somewhere, right? Small, but it grew. So, right? Just the beginning. So at the same time as these trends have been happening in Christianity, as logic would tell you, there's been an increase in those who associate with or align with non-Christian religions. And so we can see that in the chart, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, and other faiths. And the one that has grown the most in the United States is Muslim by 0.5%. And right after that is Hindu by 0.3% and all the other faiths after that. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? You can kind of get this idea, this image of, yes, we really are becoming more sort of spiritually interested, less organized, dogmatic religion, and that we're also becoming more diverse and multi-faith in this country. Well, when you look at these statistics and try to figure out what exactly does this mean, one thought people often have is that because the religious affiliation has been declining, as with the unaffiliateds growing by so much, that we're becoming a secular society, that we're becoming like Europe. But that isn't what's happening. People aren't leaving religion for nothing. They're leaving religion for spirituality. So there's an interest there still in connecting with something higher and having a sense of purpose and meaning and knowing a deeper way of looking at your life, how to treat others. There's actually an expansion happening there, not a shrinking. And some of the statistics, some of the research I thought was actually quite heartening in this regard, because it says that even though traditional church attendance is down, people are reporting a growing sense of connection with something greater than themselves. So there was a 7-point increase in the percentage of American adults who say they regularly feel a deep sense of spiritual peace and well-being. Everything is holy now. And a similar 7-point increase in the share of Americans who say they regularly feel a deep sense of wonder about the universe. Isn't that beautiful? So it really is this evolution. It's the evolution of spirituality. And by the way, the research also shows that the vast majority of Americans, I think it's like 80%, maybe more, increasingly see God as loving, kind, benevolent, counselor, or presence, as opposed to the angry, judgmental, fire and brimstone God that is sometimes more familiar from early childhood. And there's also this growing awareness that there are many paths to God and that they're legitimate. So there is no one right way. And a lot of that is happening because we make friends with people from other faith traditions and we find out who they are and we realize, hey, that's really interesting. And we love them. It makes it much harder to draw these lines of division when you actually know people of that faith. It's a beautiful thing. Very encouraging. Well, what does it all mean for religion and what does it mean for unity? Well, here's my take on it. In the words of a song that we used to sing at the beginning of our service, we're in the right place at the right time. We're just where we're supposed to be. And I say that because if you look at the chasm between traditional dogmatic religion and the more sort of dispersed spirituality, maybe a little bit more eclectic, we are an inclusive spiritual movement. So it has some form to it, but at the same time, it is open and accepting. And so we serve the religious, we serve the spiritual but not religious, we serve the spiritual and religious. And we do so with great joy. And we know that our movement is continuing to evolve as we all continue to learn. We're very serious here about providing a safe place where everyone can grow spiritually, in honoring all paths and appreciating and honoring each individual's right to choose their path. And rather than being dogmatic, you know, they say in unity, don't come to unity to get your questions answered. Come to unity to get your answers questioned. Because we're trying to figure it out too, and there's a lot changing in the world. And everybody is on their own path to find truth. And that's a good thing. Well, I feel there are two particular gifts that we have to offer the spiritual but not religious. And by the way, a big percentage of the spiritual but not religious is the millennials, those folks who became adults right around 2000. And the first thing is community. Now, I think, and that is no small thing, I remember when I was in my very spiritual but not religious days as a young adult, and I love yoga, I love transcendental meditation, I went to spiritual retreats, I read a lot of spiritual books, I got in on some cool discussions, and I felt really spiritually fed by that. I mean, I would feel a great sense of centeredness. But I also felt lonely. I had spiritual practices, but I didn't have a spiritual path, much less people to share it with. And so it was a feeling of being a little bit at sea. I wanted something that had a little bit more shape to it and more community. And I found it, and so did you. And what we find is that with the millennials in particular, as well as all of those who say they are spiritual but not religious, that there's this growing hunger for community. So now that they've kind of dismissed all of organized religion and everything that means and staying away from religious institutions, they're really seeking avidly for how to create community because they miss it. And there was a report that just came out called How We Gather. It talked about all the different ways the millennials are creating groups, creating community. So because they do have this hunger for a sense of purpose in their lives, for meaning, for how to make a difference. What's this really all about? How are we supposed to treat one another? This generation is very globally connected and very locally isolated. And so they've created groups such as on one end of the continuum, it's called the dinner party. And young adults whose parents have died, they don't even know each other, but they find it online and they come together and have a dinner party at which they share their grieving and support one another. At the other end of the spectrum, or as I think of it, is CrossFit. where community develops around health and wellness goals. They get to know each other and they hold each other accountable. And as I said, right now, religious institutions are being pretty much summarily dismissed. But I believe and I affirm that that can and will change, because not all spiritual communities are alike. And the second big gift that I feel we have to offer the spiritual but not religious is a new kind of Christianity. And I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because the new kind of Christianity is really what we think of as the original Christianity, what Jesus taught. We say in Unity that we are about positive, practical, progressive Christianity, that we seek to follow the teachings of Jesus, not so much the teachings about Jesus. And I like to say that we're about inclusive Christianity, that we are here to practice what Jesus preached. It's new. It's different. And again, when I was wandering in the wilderness trying to find my spiritual home, and I checked out Baha'i, and I checked out Buddhism and Hinduism and, you know, all sorts of stuff. It was just a time for doing that. And I liked much of what I found, but it wasn't mine. It was cool. It was neat. But it didn't feel like my path. And I had this lingering sense of unsettledness, because I had sort of abandoned the faith tradition that I was most familiar with. As I've said before, I didn't grow up in a religious household, but I certainly was more familiar with Christianity than anything else, with Christmas and Easter and some knowledge of the Bible and Jesus. I felt funny, like there was unfinished business, like something needed to be completed there. And so when I found Unity, and through Unity realized that there's a way of relating to Jesus and the Bible and Christianity that is beautiful and hopeful, encouraging, empowering, makes sense, and is all about love, I felt I'd come home. And I felt not only liberated, but I felt whole. Anybody felt that way? It's like an old wound had healed. And my wish is that those folks who have really sort of run fast away from organized religion, whatever it has been, that each of them also finds a way to heal, because it doesn't feel good to be carrying around those wounds or that bitterness. Somebody in the first service said that he had realized that he was being judgmental about the religious organizations that he was calling judgmental. Uh-oh. You have to get past that. There's room for everyone. Everyone's entitled to their own path. And we just let that be. So, you know, as we explore into spiritual topics, we continue to discover new things, and many of the discoveries are delightful, are they not? I think that's part of the fun of being in Unity. And so while I was working on this talk, I had what I thought was a great aha. So I was thinking about the spiritual but not religious and their beliefs, such as every person is worthy of love and respect. Keep politics out of religion. That hypocrisy in religion is intolerable. And that the most important thing is not what we believe, but how we behave. And really that diversity is a beautiful thing. So I was thinking about these, and I thought, that reminds me of someone else. That reminds me of someone that had many of these beliefs, if not all of them, about 2,000 or so years ago. Jesus of Nazareth. And as I began thinking about it, and I realized the ways in which he had bucked the system, and he confronted the Pharisees, and he violated the letter of the law and honor of the spirit of the law. He reached out to all people. He bashed the hypocrites. He showed this respect and love for everyone. I thought, dang, he was spiritual but not religious. I thought that was like really, you know, really clever. And then I was looking on the internet, and I found this cartoon. And the cartoon says, there's a group of people, Jesus, you've got to do something about this spiritual but not religious problem before it gets worse. And Jesus says, why? They got it from me. I as we speak on this topic, you may find that various elements of it resonate for you. If you are or have been spiritual but not religious, there may be a part of you that's absolutely marveling that you're sitting in a church right now. Can this really be me here? And I have to tell you that the fact that you are here and that you're deriving the value that you are seeking for your own spiritual path, and you are doing it in a community where people, some of the people have Baptist roots, strong Catholic ties, Jewish heritage, a few atheists in the mix, Buddhist interests, Baha'i backgrounds, and pagan beliefs. The fact that you are here having that experience, just what's right for you in this diverse and beautiful community, says something profound, really profound, about what is possible for inclusive Christianity and spiritual community. I find that extremely exciting and very hopeful. So in closing, I'd like to share something I also found on the internet that I thought really kind of boils it all down to what's most important. It was just a comment on an article about spiritual but not religious. It said, there are many people who claim to be spiritual who do not behave spiritually. There are many people who belong to a religion but do not follow its teachings. What we say we are is less important than what we truly are in practice. Amen. Let's move now into our meditation. I invite you to take a deep breath in. Close your eyes if you wish. And as you release, just truly let go. Let go of any tension in your body, any busy thoughts. Breathe and let go. I invite you to envision a beautiful white light of love and peace cascading from the top of your head down through every part of your body to your very toes. Just relax. When we come to the state of inner peace where we have shed busy thoughts and outside superficial differences, we find God, Spirit, by whatever name you prefer. We feel this essence of being that is at the core of all life. So beautiful, so peaceful. Breathe into it and know that the same essence of goodness and life is in every living being. No matter what the outer difference is, we truly are one. I invite you to breathe into this sacred moment of knowing, to open your heart and your mind, and allow Spirit to speak to you, move through you, and heal you in the silence. from this place of inner peace, this great well of spirit that lies within us. We feel our gratitude bubble up. How grateful we are to be alive and a part of all that is at this time in history, in this place, to see the unfolding of spiritual consciousness, the evolution in our world and in our lives. We behold the good in it, and we see the highest and best in all involved. And for these blessings and for our joy, we're so grateful. And so it is. Amen.